The Conquest of Bashan. This chapter is based on Deuteronomy 2, 3, 1-11. After passing south of Edom, the Israelites turned north toward the Promised Land. Their route now lay over a vast, high plain, swept by cool, fresh breezes, a welcome change from the hot, dry valley. They pressed forward, happy and hopeful. God had commanded, "Do not harass Moab, nor contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot." The same was repeated concerning the Ammonites, also descendants of Lot. The people of Israel soon reached the country of the Amorites. This strong, warlike people had crossed the Jordan, made war on the Moabites, and gained some of their territory. The route to the Jordan lay directly through this territory, and Moses sent a friendly message to Sihon, the Amorite king. "Let me pass through your land. You shall sell me food for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot." The answer was a decided refusal, and all the soldiers of the Amorites were summoned to oppose the invaders. This intimidating army struck terror to the Israelites. In skill for warfare, their enemies had the advantage. To all human appearance, the Amorites would make a quick end of Israel. But Moses kept his eyes on the cloudy pillar. This evidence of God's presence was still with them. At the same time, he directed them to do all that human power could do in preparing for war. Their enemies were confident that they would blot out the Israelites from the land. But from the owner of all lands, the message had been given to Israel: "Rise, take your journey, and cross over the river Arnon. Look, I have given into your hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to possess it, and engage him in battle. This day will I begin to put the dread of you and fear of you upon the nations under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you, and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you." How God revealed his love to wicked nations. These nations on the borders of Canaan would have been spared if they had not stood to oppose Israel in defiance of God's word. The Lord gave Abraham the promise: "In the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete." Genesis 15, verse 16. God spared them for 400 years to give unmistakable evidence that he was the only true God. All his miracles in bringing Israel from Egypt were familiar to them. They could have known the truth, but they rejected the light and clung to their idols. When the Lord brought his people to the borders of Canaan a second time, those heathen nations were given more evidence of his power. They saw that God was with Israel in the victory over King Arad and the Canaanites, and in the miracle to save those dying from the sting of the serpents. In all their journeys and encampments, the Israelites had done no harm to the people or their possessions. On reaching the border of the Amorites, Israel had asked permission only to travel directly through the country, promising to observe the same rules that had governed their relations with other nations. When the Amorite king refused and defiantly gathered his armies for battle, their cup of iniquity was full, and God would now exercise his power to overthrow them. The Israelites crossed the river Arnon and went forward against the enemy. A battle took place, and the armies of Israel won. Soon they were in possession of the Amorite country. The captain of the Lord's host defeated the enemies of his people. He would have done the same 38 years earlier if Israel had trusted in him. The army of Israel eagerly pressed forward and soon reached a country that might well test their courage and faith in God. Before them lay the powerful kingdom of Bashan, crowded with great stone cities that to this day excite the wonder of the world. 60 cities with high walls, gates, and bars, besides a great many rural towns. The houses were made of huge black stones, so large as to make the buildings unconquerable by any force brought against them. It was a country filled with wild caverns and rocky hideouts. The inhabitants, descendants from a giant race, were of impressive size and strength, and known for such violence and cruelty as to be the terror of all surrounding nations. Og, the king, was remarkable for size even in a nation of giants.
But the cloudy pillar moved forward, and the Hebrew soldiers advanced to Edrei, where the giant king waited for them. Og had skillfully chosen the place of battle. The city of Edrei stood on the border of a high, broad flatland, rising abruptly from the plain and covered with jagged rocks. It could be approached only by narrow pathways, steep and difficult to navigate. In case of defeat, his forces could find refuge in that wilderness of rocks, where it would be impossible for strangers to follow. Moses trusted God. Confident of success, the king came out with an immense army on the open plain. When the Hebrews looked at that giant of giants towering above the soldiers of his army, when they saw the seemingly invincible fortress with unseen thousands entrenched behind it, the hearts of many quaked with fear. But Moses was calm and firm. The Lord had said concerning the king of Bashan, "Do not fear him, for I have delivered him and all his people and his land into your hand. You shall do to him as you did to Sihon, king of the Amorites." No mighty giants, walled cities, armed hosts, nor rocky fortresses could stand before the captain of the Lord's host. The Lord led the army, and the Lord conquered in behalf of Israel. The giant king and his army were destroyed, and the Israelites soon took possession of the whole country. Thus, that strange people who had given themselves up to terrible idolatry were blotted from the earth. Israel's fatal mistake. Many remembered the events that nearly 40 years before had doomed Israel to long desert wandering. The report of the spies concerning the Promised Land was correct in many respects. The cities were walled and very great and inhabited by giants. But now they could see the fatal mistake of the previous generation in distrusting the power of God. This had prevented them from entering the beautiful land at once. God had promised his people that if they would obey his voice, he would go ahead of them and fight for them. He would drive out the inhabitants of the land. But now, Israel must go forward against alert and powerful foes and do battle with well-trained armies that had been preparing to resist. The earlier generation had failed dramatically. But the test was more severe now than when God had commanded Israel to go forward. The difficulties had greatly increased since they refused to go forward when told to do so. God still tests his people, and if they fail, he brings them again to the same point, and the second time, the test will be more severe than the first. The mighty God of Israel is our God. In him we may trust, and if we obey his requirements, he will work for us as he did for his ancient people. The way will sometimes be so blocked by obstacles, apparently insurmountable, as to dishearten those who will yield to discouragement. But God is saying, go forward. The difficulties that fill your soul with dread will disappear as you move forward in the path of obedience, humbly trusting in God.